Okay, so my name is Chris, and the partner whom I worked with over the summer is Michelle Mojica, and it's unfortunate that she couldn't be here. And so I did my internship working in the oil refineries along with the union workers. And so I have no relationships to disclose. All right, and so just a little background. So in Southern California, it's a major hub for importing crude oil for processing. And not only that, but there's also oil drilling in the area. And so we were stationed in the Wilmington, Carson area, and this is where half of LA's refining capacity is concentrated in. And some refineries include BP, ConocoPhillips, Tesoro, and Valero. And as we all know, it's a pretty high-risk industry. And so from the news, the recent oil spill in the Gulf Coast that has leaked millions of crude oil has had negative impacts on not only the community, the wildlife, but also on the oil workers. And we often hear about these fires and explosions on the news, but we rarely hear about the serious injuries and adverse health effects from being exposed to the vast amount of chemicals. And so the public doesn't know about it, but for those who are working in this field and who understand the issues are trying to make it safer for the workers. And so nowadays, there's the green movement where governments want to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and people wanting to practice sustainability habits. And so in California in 2006, they passed the Assembly Bill 32, which seeks to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions by 2025 to 1990 levels. And also, it also has the effects of communities because usually the refineries are in areas of lower socioeconomic status and usually people of color. And so this raises environmental justice issues. And so the implications are great for this industry because it means the oil industries have to really clean up their act to not only help the workers but also decrease their pollutants in the environment and to prevent harmful effects on the communities. So for our project objectives, we helped the USW Local 675 to identify health and safety hazards. And the second part was to lay the groundwork for discussions and meetings on applying green chemistry to their workplaces and to educate workers on what is green chemistry and how it affects them down the road. And through education and information sessions, we can help workers decide on issues relating to green chemistry and transition them into safe jobs that are new and sustainable. Okay, and so for our research, it consisted of four main parts. So the main one were the mapping activities, which we trained 46 workers. So the first one is the hazard map, where we asked the workers to make a diagram or a schematic of their work areas and to just identify what kind of hazards that they might be exposed to. And the second part is a body map, where we have a poster of a human body, so like this one over here, and we asked the workers what kind of injuries they've sustained on a job and then just to say what was the attributing cause. And we also interviewed seven workers. We also had a site visit, not in the area, but farther up north at a Chevron refinery. And finally, we did green research on finding chemical alternatives just to replace some of the more harmful chemicals that are used in the processing. And so for the findings, so this is the hazard mapping findings, and it shows that the workers had identified chemical hazards as the most concern. And as you can see, it includes safety, there's physical, ergonomic, biological, and mental issues. This one over here shows the body mapping findings. So once again, five of the six categories from the last slide are shown. And even though the last slide has shown chemical hazards as being the most problematic, actually the category that caused the most injuries were ergonomic issues such as repetitive motions, awkward positions, such as like working in cramped environments, etc. And second, safety hazards came with working in uneven spaces or slippery areas and working near hot equipment. And so during the interviews with the workers, so even though the mappings didn't really show mental stressors as being a big problem, but in the interviews, many of them had said that mental stressors were a really big part in their jobs. And they also said that training is usually inadequate because the current use of computer-based trainings, or CBTs, do not fully test workers' knowledge and operations within the refineries. And they also stated that previously, before, they had skilled staff conducting training sessions, but due to cost-cutting strategies, the quality and scope of training diminished greatly. And for the site visit, we were fortunate enough to enter the Chevron facility, so we did our own personal observations into the different parts in the oil refining plant. And we also saw some safety and physical hazards, such as high noise, wet areas, and high-pressure steams. And another interesting thing that we saw were the containment systems that the facility tried to, the Chevron facility has the containment system so that just in case if there's an oil spill, then they know what to do with it. So this included sand dunes and impounds, but we weren't able to talk to the workers directly or figure out how effective their capturing systems were. And lastly, we did green research on finding chemical alternatives and energy alternatives. But then at the end, it was really hard to find some chemical alternatives. And so these were the comments from the interviews that we did. And so as you can see, companies place blame on the workers and shift the responsibility onto workers. And so pretty much the burden gets placed on them, and then they're fearful in reporting any injuries. So some challenges were, as I stated earlier, observing workers in action. So most of our information that was gathered were based on anecdotal and personal experiences. Not to say that their experiences weren't good or good for our data, but it would have been nice that we were able to enter the facilities and to actually see how workers perform on their jobs. And of course, it was difficult to get access into the refineries because of high security reasons. And lastly, so finding safer chemical alternatives were hard. This is partially due to the period of the internship and due to the fact that there isn't much out there to substitute some of the more crucial processes of refining. But that means companies can still make an effort to have renewable energy powering the plant. And so some successes. So for our part, it was good in that we got a little introduction into the refining processes of the refinery. And it was also good because we successfully ran training sessions for the workers. And for the workers' part, it was exciting in that they were able to take their knowledge that they had learned and share it with their fellow co-workers and take it to their health and safety committees. And also, workers have a new way to raise awareness of their surroundings. So when they're able to identify the hazards, they can recognize it and make changes to try and minimize their exposures. If they have the knowledge of what's going on, they will have a clearer direction and power to advocate for safer workplaces. And recommendations, so after compiling all of our findings together, one really big engineering control will be to replace the faulty and outdated equipments, because many people had complained about pipes being leaky, like really run down, dilapidated, etc. And another would be to adapt energy efficient technologies. So one of them is instead of shipping out the unwanted after processed and oil product, they can actually use that to produce synthetic gas to generate electricity. And for administrative controls, So the computer-based trainings can be redone, maybe having skilled trainers actually conduct training sessions. And lastly, maybe companies can incorporate certified ergonomists to have them play larger roles in refineries, such as training workers and designing the refineries with them in mind. And so the future uses for this is this can lay the groundwork for maybe a future study into the mental health effects. And the unions will use this to advocate for safer work practices and a safer work environment. And of course, it will provide knowledge of green chemistry and how can it benefit not only the workers, but also their communities and surroundings. And so I would like to thank the staff and all the mentors and the workers and also the funders for these questions. Thank you.
We did a lot of work with popular education, and for me, this was the first time that I had actually developed popular education materials, but also had the opportunity to work with workers and get their feedback. So it's one thing for you to develop a popular education material, and it's another thing for you to actually work with the workers and be able to ask them, oh, what do you think of this design? And they're like, oh, I don't understand that word, change it. You know, so for me and Annie, we worked on that water bottle label with the Health and Safety Committee, and we always received feedback from them. And in the end, I felt that it was more of their project than ours. You know, we just did like the computer work, we changed the font, we worked with the colors, but in the end, you know, it was all what they thought would benefit them. So for me, that was the first experience, and I look forward to actually using that method, you know, not only developing the material, but also getting the opportunity to work with workers and get their feedback so that in the end, it's useful for them.
Yeah, I would say the one thing I would add about their feedback that was absolutely crucial with the water bottle label is that they really strongly suggested not putting the name of the campaign on there because they feared that when we handed this out on the work site, that people would be fired for trying to unionize, as we had seen at Wilshire Car Wash. So what we ended up doing was just putting the number on there and saying, if you need help, call this number. It looks a little bit anonymous that way. It's just kind of a community group is doing something good for the workers. And it turned out to be very effective, as Maria mentioned. There were over 20 calls that they got as a result of the distribution.
I guess for me, what I took from my program is like I'm an environment and occupational health student, and we learn about sanitation, water, and how important it is for infectious disease. But I never thought about the people that pick up my trash every day. Before I did this project, I had no idea who they were. I didn't really notice them. And I think that's the one thing I took from this program is that I noticed the people who are doing a public service. They're working in public health, but they're not recognized. And that's what I thought, that's what I took from this program that I didn't learn in my classes, that there's so many people, the little people, who don't get the recognition, who don't have the MPHs or MPHDs behind their name, but they're doing a lot of important work in public health as much as we are. And I think from doing the project, that's what I learned. I felt that improved, that enhanced my education more so than the book work, just meeting the workers and learning about another side of public health that we don't learn in school. So that's what I took from it. Thank you.
I just wanted to add, in regards to your question, one thing that I learned this summer, and one of my site supervisors is here, and she can attest to this, that was a little hard for me, was translating what I learned in the classroom to being able to talk to somebody or explain it to somebody that is, like, I don't know how to explain it, but like a different population, like explaining it to a worker. Because, you know, in the classroom I'm taught, you know, if I'm going to give a presentation or, you know, write material, it's, you know, it's very academic. But I can't really speak or write that way if I'm trying to convey a message to somebody that maybe is not in a master's program, that, you know, only that just comes from a big from a different background. I don't know if this is answering your question, but it was just trying to apply. I didn't learn that at school. I was just, you know, I was taught to do presentations in a certain way, like very academically focused, but trying to transition out of that and doing it like on an everyday people level, that was a little hard. And I really, really appreciate that I was able to learn and think about that through this program, because if I wouldn't have done this program, I don't think I would have thought about it at this point in my career.
I just wanted to add that I was really happy to see the politics of occupational health. Personally, from my end, there were a lot of things that was going on in the project. For instance, I was threatened a couple times that I'd be arrested if I were to go to the workplace. The union and the management obviously had like an ongoing conflict and war going on. And that's something that I wasn't necessarily taught at school. I mean, to clarify, at school, like, we learn about things like PELs and other, and theory, but I never had an in-your-face experience where I had managers come up to me and, you know, like, bring TSA guys, like, you're not welcome here, and, like, you know, if you talk to another worker, we're going to escort you off-site, and if you come back again, we'll escort you to jail. So it was a really interesting experience, and I guess dealing with politics is something that I really appreciated out of this project. And to do an update about what happened after I left, the union had a strike vote, and they ended up like voting yes. So I believe they will be striking within the month. So.
At LaGuardia?
At LaGuardia. So. I would say I'm still interested in like policy and advocacy. I didn't realize it'd be so abrasive, but definitely, I'm still interested, definitely.
I worked with Annie, and when I first met Annie, I was really surprised because we have a lot of interest. For example, I'm interested in Latino health disparities, and Annie surprisingly was also interested in Latino health disparities. Me and Annie, the way that we work, we kind of clash heads sometimes because we like to get, you know, the details right. We like to practice our presentation. We like to edit things out and practice it again until, you know, we get it right. So, I mean, for me, it was a really great experience in terms of learning how to work with a very with graduate students because I'm an undergrad, so I had never personally had the opportunity to work with a graduate student. So just having her as a mentor and, you know, seeing what she has done, it has inspired me, you know, to not only become her partner, but also become her friend and continue in contact with her just to see, you know, hey, could you help me out with my applications, or I have this question, or I have that. So OHIP has been great about doing that, and yeah, Annie has been a great mentor, and the program has been great.
No, I would echo everything that Maria said, and one thing for me that was absolutely crucial in having Maria was that I could not communicate for about the first 5 weeks of our project. So I tried. But our campaign was run completely in Spanish from day one. All of the staff meetings were in Spanish. All of our interviews were in Spanish. All the materials were in Spanish, as you saw. And I came in with a little bit of language experience, but I mean, Maria really took the lead on a lot of stuff that I just couldn't do. So that was huge for me, and I really appreciated her stepping up. I mean, really, like, for the educational materials, mostly doing it, you know, that was your show, and the trainings were amazing that she led, and I think we really, like, as Maria mentioned, we did clash at times, but I think those were good things. You know, we clashed because we wanted to make it better, and this was a really incredible experience for me and taught me a lot about working in teams and the campaign in general, about working with really diverse populations from different backgrounds, you know, just making it work from the inside out. You know, that we were there to become part of the campaign and not to be outsiders coming in imposing what we know, because these were really, all of the projects were driven by the Health and Safety Committee, which is made up of car wash workers. So I felt like we were kind of peripheral, like as Maria said, you know, we did the typing and the technical skills, but really, like, this campaign is an amazing example of community-based research. Yeah, so it was great.
Let's actually go to a couple other questions.
A question in thinking about careers and pathways and kind of where you're going from here. The section just is starting up a mentorship program, so I just sent around at our business meeting the other day, or, you know, asked people to sign up, and we got like 30 people that are like government, academics, union leaders. I mean, this amazing group that volunteered to be mentors to people like you. So the question is, well, partly it's just to let you know that this will be coming your way, but second, what kinds of things would be helpful to you in connecting to people? I mean, you have mentors clearly in the OHIP program, but, you know, this kind of gives broader reach. What kinds of things would be helpful to you in just kind of getting you into occupational health?
I guess it depend on the individuals as far as what could be done. Well, from my end, I'm graduating this June, so I'm looking for a job.
We're working on that one.
So, I mean, job opportunities or fellowships or that sort of thing would be great for us. I can't really speak for the others, but yeah.
I was going to say, one thing I would mention would be just to have a list of people in the section, what their specialties are, because there were several cases when we were looking for greener alternatives to some of the chemical products, and we just didn't know where to start. Neither of us have a chemistry background. Really, this was very new, getting used to that. And I just found out, being here now, going through the exhibition room, that the EPA has a list of green car wash products. And if we had known that, it would have helped us save a lot of time in the project. So I think kind of like a skills inventory would have been really helpful for us.
If anyone else wants to.
Let's go to, yeah. I just had a question. Is it pink? The last thing.
Oh, yeah.
So while you were doing your work, it's in the midst of the huge corporate attack on with Prop 23 in California.
Oh, yes.
So was there any, in terms of the refinery workers and the Prop 23 and things that you found a discussion while you were doing this?
Yeah, so
because it's AB 2032, which is
I think you should tell what that is, so people are.
Yes.
Those of us who are not from California.
Okay, so Prop 23 was a proposition financed by the Texas oil industry to launch an attack on AB 32. AB 32 really tried to set lower limits in terms of, is it greenhouse? Greenhouse gases in California. I should know that. So, that was the facilities that you went to visit were those Texas facilities, and I was just wondering what was going on during the heat of that.
Okay. Yeah. So during the summer, so we actually, so during the training sessions, when we talked about green chemistry, we discussed about like what is AB32 and like so AB32 and how it affects them, and just teaching them that it's that you guys should support AB32 because like it's not going to ruin your jobs. It's not going to take away your jobs within this industry, but I actually open up my jobs. And it also talks about like alternative jobs like within, well, it talks about alternative jobs where they can, you know, use the same skills so they can actually use it in a different industry that's more sustainable and renewable.
So did they buy into that, or?
Well, I mean, at the end, pretty much you told them, well, no on Prof.
Well, I can just say that I was, right before OHIP started, myself and Ingrid Zubieta were doing a green chemistry training with the local. That local is very progressive and supports the climate change initiative, but not necessarily all the members feel the same way. And we had a very heated debate, let me just say, because we had people do role plays and take different positions. And within the local, I mean, I told them, Chris, there were some other examples where the local was making its own decisions about how they should run their training, you know. And I said, you know what? This is democracy in action. I mean, you know, it's unions are, for better or for worse, I mean, they're not all the same, but they are one of the more democratic forms of organizations that we have in this country. And you can see it right there in that project where there, these issues were debated big time. So, yeah, it was very interesting.
I mentioned a book that I think every student should have at the beginning of their career. It's called The Art of Anonymous Activism. I wish I had had it when I was an OSHA inspector. It's called Serving the Public While Surviving Public Service. And Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, the Government Accountability Project, and the Project for Government Oversight. It's been out for a couple of years. And it basically says if you get yourself in a situation where you feel like you need to be a whistleblower, be very careful how you do it, and if you shouldn't have to give up your career to become a whistleblower, which is something that